Hello everyone, you're listening to episode 11 of the Art Scene Podcast. This week's guest is Luca Antonucci, who is an artist here in the Bay Area. He is also the co-founder of Copa Press, a design, printing, and publishing partnership, which I first heard of when I attended the San Francisco Art Book Fair. I even bought a few of the prints that they had set up at their table. In fact, it was Luca who sold them to me. Well, fortunately, I had the opportunity to get in touch with Luca afterwards and meet up with him in the Mission District where Copa is located, or what he likes to refer to as the basement. Oh, but before I move on to our conversation, I want to remind everyone to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and to be sure to leave a comment. This helps with our ratings, which then helps spread the word about the podcast. Okay, here's Luca now.
How you doing?
Good.
So you're just down the street from the David Ireland house, right?
Yeah.
Did you used to have a place over on that side over there before you guys were here?
No, we've been in the basement, or Culpa's been in the basement for about 3 years now.
Okay.
This is like the first place where we had our own studio.
Yeah.
Before that, I was working out of a residency in Berkeley at Kalaw.
Okay.
With the David Ireland house, we were somewhat connected to that because we just worked on a catalog for the exhibition that was at the Walter McBean.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah, when they had that show over there.
Yeah. So we worked with them on some of the material for this catalog and helped designing it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, as we talked about earlier, you were recommended to me by Emily Reynolds, who I went to school with, and I found out later that you also went to SFAI, but a few years before we did.
Yeah.
What led you to come to San Francisco?
I'm from San Francisco, sort of. I moved here when I was 13 from Italy, and before that I lived in New York, but my mother at the time was working for the Italian government, and so we got transferred quite a bit.
Oh, is she Italian?
Both my parents are Italian.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. What do they do for the government?
My mom used to be the cultural attaché for the Italian government, so, like, she was the director of the Italian Cultural Institute in New York and San Francisco.
Oh, wow.
And then when she's in Italy, it kind of goes, like, they send you abroad, and then they call you back to the country.
Yeah.
So when she was in Italy, she worked in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, like, as part of a larger group of people.
Yeah.
And then they would, like, assign her to a post.
Yeah.
And we would all move with her.
Oh, that's interesting. What did your dad do?
My dad has been retired for a while, but he's had a lot of jobs. He used to race cars and he worked for Alitalia for a while.
Yeah. So what brought your family to San Francisco?
My mom's job.
Just your mom's job.
And so I moved here like about halfway through eighth grade.
So obviously she was in, I would assume it's a political job. So she was in politics, right? I'm assuming, or more cultural, but it just happened to
it's
be.
It's more cultural. Yeah. It's just because Italy has like, and a lot of countries in Europe, I feel like have these programs to promote like their culture abroad.
Yeah.
So part of the Ministries of Foreign Affairs, part of their mission is to promote Italian culture through theater and film and art.
Right.
So she specifically was assigned to San Francisco and would put on like the Italian Film Festival have shows at the gallery that was in the institution. Or at the institute, excuse me. And then, you know, like opera and music.
So you were always surrounded by the arts then?
Yeah,
Since you were a kid.
She's kind of like a curator, just not just for visual art. Right. Like a lot of different
Like all arts. Different arts, yeah. And was that kind of the reason why you decided to just be an artist? It was just you were just surrounded by it and then you decided to just stick with it and that's you just got...
I was, like, most interested in film because that was kind of her focus.
Okay.
As a curator. And so when I initially went to get my undergrad, I went to University of San Francisco.
Okay.
It's like a small Jesuit school.
Yeah.
And I studied film there, but under the veil of, like, media studies.
Yeah.
So kind of film theory.
Yeah.
And then I worked in film a little bit after I graduated. moved around a bunch, and then kind of came back to San Francisco because I had gotten into SFAI.
Mm-hmm.
And then once I was at SFAI, I decided that I didn't want to make films anymore.
Yeah.
And that I wanted to make sculptures and paintings and or actually painting's probably the only thing I can make. But you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Just like have more of an interdisciplinary approach to art.
What made you, well, one, I guess take some time off from right after undergrad and then make you want to go back to your MFA? Like, well, why did you come back?
Oh, well, so I was kind of just doing all these remedial jobs for so long.
Yeah.
I moved to this, like, small town in Texas with a bunch of my friends, and we were just, like, landscaping and construction work and stuff like that. And I worked for, like, a broadcast television station.
Oh, wait, so how'd you go from landscaping to the broadcast?
Well, so I worked right after school. I worked for broadcast on TV, KMTP, Channel 32, which was at the time it was like in Petrero Hill, like right off of Bryant Street, sort of close to KQED. And I was just like a switcher. It was honestly like the most boring job I've ever had. But I sort of enjoyed it because I could like work on my own films while I was working there.
Yeah.
And like literally like the job description was every half hour or an hour you would like change a tape. Mm-hmm. And that was the that was the breadth of the experience. And I guess those kind of like repetitive jobs. I also worked on some film crews like on the side for like kind of B budget horror and sci-fi movies that were being like shot in California.
So you were still trying to like stick with film for a little bit.
Yeah.
You
know,
like,
yeah.
Trying to like, what can I do with this?
Yeah. But it seemed like there was like, you know, it was a hard barrier for entry, you know?
Yeah.
I could get jobs on like kind of student films and like B budget films. But like every time I would like try out for like a bigger production, of course, you know, I like didn't really have the experience for it.
Yeah.
And then when I started making, and since I was making films this whole time, and I had a friend who went to SFAI, and we could just, like, screen them there whenever we wanted.
Yeah.
And I just kind of, like, realized that art had, like, this kind of open door in a way.
Okay.
Even though it doesn't seem so much that way to me now. Like,
what do you mean by open door?
Like you could just be a part of it if you wanted to, you know?
Yeah. It's inclusive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In a way. In other ways, it's not. It's totally exclusive.
Like, anybody can be an artist if you wanted to.
Yeah.
Like, there's not, like, the possibilities are pretty endless.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, and just, like, the ways you can work and the people you can work with.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, in film, you know, you have like a defined role and you're paid to perform that task,
mm-hmm.
and they don't really like cross pollinate as much. So I guess that was the reason. And so when I, after I worked at the station, I moved to Texas and I was there for a year, and then I sort of applied to grad school. And then when I got an interview, I came back for the interview.
Right.
And I just like, moved back.
Yeah. And then, so then now you're at SFAI, and like, how were you introduced to the other mediums when you were like so focused on film for so long? Yeah.
I guess it was like when I first came in, I decided that I wanted to do things besides film. So I applied as new genres instead of under film. Just thinking that, you know, I would learn other things.
Which is a unique thing to SFAI, right? The new genres department.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, like, yeah. I guess like a lot of schools have like a new media or like video and performance department, but I thought new genres was unique mostly because of the people that were the faculty there were like so interdisciplinary, like like at the time I really wanted to work with Will Rogan, and you know, then there's like Labad and Bodwi, and they're all like they're all just such different artists, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it was kind of unique that this one department had such varying, like, skill sets, you know?
Yeah. Like, the possibility of you learning more than just one medium and just, like, and the skills that go along with
totally.
It is what attracted you, it seems like.
For sure. And I feel like SFAI, for a lot of the time, had, like, a really heavy, like, studio focus,
mm-hmm.
which for me was important because I was behind on that.
Okay.
And it was something I realized when I got there, you know, like a lot of people knew how to like work with clay and like draw, and I just like didn't know any of that. Mm-hmm. So I mean, I still really don't, but at least I got to take those classes where I feel like, in other grad and like graduate school environments, like they kind of like feel like, you know, your shit already. Mm-hmm. And like, now we're going to be like focusing on what you want to make.
Yeah.
And I did do that, but also I was trying to like learn along the way, cause I felt like I was behind other students.
Yeah. I noticed that too when I went, you know, and I was an MA, but as an undergrad, I did photography, and mm-hmm. I did a lot of studio work in photography. Mm-hmm. And then when I went to SFAI, I think that was the most surprising thing was how different it was from my undergrad. It was a lot more.
Like, oh, yeah, it's just like a mass.
Everybody could do, and it amazed me how much, like, every painter could also do some resin work. Mm. You know, every person that was doing clay work can also, you know, draw and photograph really well.
Yeah.
And it just amazed me how well-rounded all the students there were, and all the different, and I think, and a lot of that, I think, had to do with SFAI's curriculum.
Oh,
just
totally. The way
they pushed that.
Yeah, and even if you want to stay in, like, your, you know, in the medium that you're comfortable working in, or the discipline, I feel like it still pays to have all that stuff, because it changes the way that you think about your work.
Yeah.
As being less about making a film and as about, like, what's the best technique that I can use for this particular project?
Yeah.
And I think that's, like, the most valuable thing that I learned there.
Yeah.
Was, like, because I think that really translated into what I do now, which is, like, you know, sometimes, like, what we have in the studio, which is very little, like, as you can see, isn't right for the project that people approach us for. And so, like, knowing other people that work in different disciplines, I can, like, kind of either direct people there or, you know, kind of pull those people into our studio to work on a specific project.
Right.
Yeah, so I think it really helped in a way.
Yeah. Well, what kind of work were you making when you were in grad school?
Oh, my God, just, like, all over the place. A lot of, like, video installation.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I liked aspects of sculpture and I liked aspects of film.
Yeah.
So I was trying to, like, work somewhere in between those two. So a lot of the times I would generate imagery with like, old video equipment, and then try and, like, kind of, like, freeze it,
mm-hmm.
and then present that as a piece.
Yeah.
Kind of, like, along Nam June Paik.
Yeah.
Like, aesthetic of video work.
Yeah, and you just did a recent show of your work, right? I think mm-hmm. I read about it. It was called The Custodian.
Yeah, Pro Arts.
Yeah, and then the description was, one of the lines in the description was, it was dismantling the conceptual pillars that hold the aura of the original, eroding the distinction between artist and custodian.
Oh, God. Yeah, that was Sarah Perk read that. No, I mean, it's great. I just, like, talk about my work. But, yeah. I mean, that's what was so great about that work. It's like, or that show, is that you have people that write so much better than you and like, look at your work from a different perspective. And, I mean, that is how I feel about that project, but I you know what I mean? Like,
what intrigued you to, like, do a project about, because I think that's an interesting topic.
Well, just, like, I've always, like, or at least in my own practice, as something separate from Culpa, even though they cross over a lot, I've always been, like, interested in the idea of, like, historical fiction as a way of creating artwork. So I think, like, with that show specifically, I really wanted to, like, step away from my practice, or what I felt my practice was at the moment, which was, like, identifying a period in history and then looking for kind of, interesting things that had happened that I can somehow make, like, a visual metaphor to represent kind of, like, the craziness of that event, for lack of a better word. I kind of wanted to step away from that because I felt like it was this easy way for me to make art, you know? And so The Custodian was all about just, like how can I assemble, like, how can I work with found imagery and kind of create a completely false narrative and still, like, have the kind of like power and meaning that went along with like the historical like fiction of the of, that I'm talking about, you know?
Yeah.
But it gets like really complicated there, and I kind of like where it falls apart, where you think there's something to it, and then there's nothing there, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense.
No, yeah, it does. Yeah. And like this topic, you know, the original, the reason why I brought it up was when I saw that the title of the show was The Custodian, was mm-hmm. I recently read an article in The New Yorker.
Yeah, the Ben Lerner one.
Yeah, it was like, it was mm-hmm. called The Custodian,
right? Yeah,
yeah,
and that's what the title's based on.
Oh, really? Yeah. And I saw that, I was like, oh man, this is like exactly what this article was talking about.
I mean,
about.
I loved that article, because it's everything that I'm interested in art making. It's just, where's the distinction between not only working with found imagery, but just, I feel like, working in the way that all artists work, which is like having this overwhelming and like at times like restrictive body of information to mm-hmm. deal with, you know, just like, I mean, not to like pull out the cheesy, like, oh, ever since the internet or whatever, but just like, there's so much out there and you have such access to it that I feel like art practices have become increasingly more so about being like a custodian,
mm-hmm.
Just like choosing what is important and then like reproducing it.
Right.
Instead of so much just like creating out of thin air, or like the romantic notion of the artist. You know?
Right. Like that need to keep saving everything. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And, I guess it's like part of the article is like the artist that they were referring to in the very beginning of it was like, it's okay that it deteriorates.
Yeah, of course. Right. Well, and there's that contention too. Right. There's the contention of like, someone made this with a specific purpose in mind, and the custodian's job is to like identify that intention and try and preserve it somehow. But then also sometimes you make things without any of those intentions.
Right.
And then the job of the conservator or whoever's in charge of the work is to just kind of like think about what the best way might be without any kind of clue to what that is, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think they talk about the Klaus Oldenburg piece with like the wiring inside.
Right.
And it's like, is it important that wiring was like, is 1970s wiring and not, you know, 2016 wiring.
Right. And if they use like modern day wiring to replace it, do you change the piece in its entirety?
Yeah.
Right. And the intent of the artist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love those questions. And so the work in The Custodian, it's like, yeah, you know, there is like a, like kind of a larger narrative built from all of it. But what was most important to me in that show was, how do you make objects that are both decaying and being conserved at the same time?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, so the best example of it is the book. Like, it's all printed on newsprint, like on the Rizzo, in like a very unarchival way. But then the way that it's bound and treated is like treated like a very important document, you know, to be conserved for years to come. And so the book itself, the interior of it is deteriorating, and then the casing is trying to like keep it from rotting away.
Right.
And I like that like dichotomy.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, which segues into the next question, which is about Copa Press.
Mm-hmm.
You run a press which produces copies of books and prints.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And so it's interesting that you're in that work.
Mm.
So like, well, tell me about Copa Press. How did they get conceived?
Well, so I run Copa Press with my partner David Kasperzak, and we treat it as like a collaborative practice between the two of us. So like, part of that practice includes like client work, where we do like designing and print work for people. But a big part of it is also, like, it's an art practice for us. So we're not only publishing books, but we're also making our own work and publishing it through Culpa Press.
Yeah.
So I really like to think about it, like, it as it is now, as a collaboration between me and David.
Yeah.
And then, And then the projects that we come out with are often like there's a third a second collaboration between us and an artist. And so we'll just, the basic premise is that we just ask an artist to make something with us. And then depending on what they want to make, we try and find the best way to do that.
Right.
And sometimes a lot of the times that happens in the studio. But a lot of the times we have to like pull our resources from outside the studio.
And this isn't your main money making.
No, it is. Yeah,
it is. Really?
Yeah, it's my full time job.
So how is business then?
I mean, it's good. It's hard to live here, as I'm sure you know.
Yeah, especially because you're in the Mission, which is I think one of the biggest neighborhoods where the issue of people being pushed out because of rent. Yeah, it's happening
for sure. And I mean, I personally live in the Sunset, which I mean, it still happens out there to a large degree, but. But I've been in San Francisco for a while, and so I don't know if it's gotten easier to deal with that stuff, or I'm just used to it.
Yeah.
Like I know it's as bad as it's ever been, but it's just always been so hard to live here that I just kind of, it comes with the territory for me.
Yeah.
I was kind of bartending on the side for the first few years. Oh, I should say, I started Culpa with Carissa Potter, who was another SFAI grad. And then after, like, basically we ran it together for 3 years. And then she decided she wanted to start her own business and do, like prints and greeting cards and stuff like that. And so we kind of like split paths. And I ran it alone for about a year. And then me and David have been working together for like 2.5-3 years.
Yeah. You grew up here almost basically, right?
Basically.
You were 13, you said?
Yeah. And I kind of feel like high school is like your formative
years.
Yeah,
right. Like those are kind of the most important years. Yeah. Well, and you went to college here. Like undergrad and graduate school. So.
Yeah. Only because my parents were moving away. So yeah. I kind of feel like that's everyone's main motivation to leave. Not that I don't like my parents, but I just like, you know, I was like, you know, I've lived in the Bay Area, and I went to high school in Marin County.
Okay.
And so, like, I felt like I didn't get a chance to, like, really live in the city
as
much as I wanted to, so I just stayed.
You know? Yeah, I was the same way. I grew up in San Diego County, but I grew up in the northern part of the county.
Oh, okay.
In the suburbs, and then I decided for undergrad. I stayed in the county, but I stayed in the University of San Diego, which is just like USF.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a Catholic small school, but it was closer to down, it was like dear in the city of San Diego.
Oh, nice.
And it was the same way. I was like, I never really experienced downtown.
Oh, yeah,
it's exactly. Very different from
yeah.
You know, suburbs. So you being from here and being here and seeing so much has changed, what do you think that means for like for art businesses like yours, like Copa Press, in the next few years?
I mean, it definitely gets like increasingly harder, I think, to turn a profit, at least.
Yeah.
But we just kind of, like, take it one step at a time. And also, like, the great thing about meeting, like, David and having him become such an integral part of Culpa. I feel weird saying this with him nearby. but
if he wants to, why?
but is that he like brought another aspect of what we do into the business. It's like before that I wasn't doing design for anyone. I was just printing.
Yeah.
And so when he came in and had a background in that, it kind of expanded what the services we could offer people, which made it easier to make more money, essentially, and also put a lot of that money that we make back into our publishing, which the idea is that is like another source of revenue for us.
Yeah.
And so I think like the important part about it is that we try and not think about what Culpa is and just let it kind of like adapt to what we need it to do.
Yeah.
While trying to like maintain its integrity, you know,
right,
whatever that is,
which is smart because I feel like that's the downfall to a lot of businesses, right? Where they don't want to change with the times, right? Or with the clientele, the type of clientele that, you know, it's like if someone comes to you and says, "Oh, I want something," you're like, "Well, we usually don't do that."
Yeah.
Well, you just lost the client. But it's like, well, what is that? Maybe we can do that.
Yeah,
for
you. Yeah. And I feel like, you know, that's our skill. Like, I have to be honest, like, I'm not the best printer. Like, it's just that, like, the way that me and David work and have been taught to work is to, like, think outside of boundaries, you know? And so, like, when people do come with us with projects, especially artists, it's not 99% of the time it doesn't fit into this easy, like, ready to print and go, you know, like, file type, or, you know, sometimes it's like an object in a publication, and sometimes it's like printing on fabric, or how do we get this done? And I feel like we're suited to deal with those problems. And the fact that we can means that if we can't do it, we'll help the person find someone who can. So,
well, what kind of clients have you had? Like, from what do they range from?
I would say, like, the majority of them are in the art world.
Yeah.
So we work with, like, some institutions and private galleries, but also artists, and, like, you know, make everything from zines to, like, catalogs in that respect. But, yeah, so all over, you know, SF MoMA, The Lab, Catist, Southern Exposure.
So, like, as a moment, we'll go to you and say, we need a catalog printed.
Yeah, usually it's, like, a poster.
Right.
but, yeah, also that. I mean, it just really just depends on the project. I think what I hope and what I think that might be starting to happen is that they kind of know or start to get familiar with our aesthetic and what we're good at.
Yeah.
And then they come to us for that. And it becomes a little easier to, like, be like, oh, this is how we work, right. You know?
I was going to ask you, what is the goal? You and David's goal, I guess, for Copal Press.
I mean, we kind of enjoy all the aspects of it, so it's hard to say that.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, it's, like, important to us that it remains, like kind of free form.
Okay.
Just because we love, like, all the parts of it that we do, which is, like, a lot of the times, and a lot of the times it's not just about client work. It's like curating a show, and me and David get to, like, in November, we're going to like put on an exhibition / release for our, like, second volume of Civic TV, which is, like, a video kind of mixtape that we make. And it's kind of structured like a television show, and it comes out on a VHS tape. And so we're going to go down to LA and, like, have a premiere of the new like edition of the show,
right?
And it'll have, like, kind of an accompanying video installation and opening party kind of thing at a gallery.
So the people you curate, like, the other work, it's not just your work, it's other people's work as well, I'm assuming. Mm-hmm. Right, are those people the same people who come to you to get stuff printed?
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the times it crosses over. And then other people too.
Yeah.
I think a lot of our, like, print clients are, like, word of mouth.
Yeah.
And a lot of our design clients are, like, relationships that David nurtures, and that some of them I nurture, and we just keep working with them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's just usually the nature of design, more so than print.
Right.
Print, I feel like our job's it's like one just leads to the next one, mm-hmm. You know, because it's like, oh, I saw something that got printed this way. I'm interested in that printing technique. I want to print it, you know?
Yeah.
And Rezo, which is the kind of printing that we do, like Rezograph, it's so specific.
Yeah.
That, like, people, there's just not that many places to go. So it's not like we're that great. It's just like we do this and we focus on it.
Yeah.
And so we will put our time into it, and it generates
work. And you all do it in this basement too, right? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. From these machines.
Just in this room, actually.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love the type of print work you guys do, because we met before, but I don't think I introduced myself to you or anything, but it was at the SF Book Art Book Fair.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and I bought three prints, which I really loved, and it was the one of the Philadelphia Museum.
Oh, right. Those are David's prints, actually.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, and David, who's just actually right behind us on the computer. David, by the way, I just want to say I love that. I love those.
Thank you.
I'm actually in the process of hanging them on my wall.
Oh, nice.
But, yeah, I mean, so, like, the work that you guys, that you sell, for instance, at those kind of art book fairs, like, is that stuff that you and David made, or is that also, like, stuff you guys made with other artists, and then
it's both. Yeah. I'd say it's like David and I, like, obviously we sit at the same desk.
Yeah.
And so it's like, we'll have these ideas that aren't necessarily like ideas for our collaborations with other artists.
Yeah.
On what we consider like the main part of our publishing.
Yeah.
And they just don't fit into that. Mm-hmm. And so we're like, oh, let's just make it, you know? And it becomes something that's just like a Culpa product.
Right.
And isn't like attributed to,
right,
to a specific collaboration. And so like a series like the Museum Prints is just a way for us to maybe make artwork that I'm taking, like, stretching this too far, but maybe it doesn't like necessarily fit into our practice.
Okay.
But we just want to make it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And sometimes it does. Like, and other times it's just like an idea and we want to see it realized. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that actually has been like the most rewarding part of Culpa, is that I can make something and then, or David can make something, and it doesn't necessarily have to be like this thing that is like embodies our artistic vision. We can just like fucking do it, and it's out there, and if people like it and like want to buy it and take it home, then it's great, and if not, that's fine too, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like a side effect of having this job, you know, which I really like.
So when I first moved to San Francisco, you know, again, I came from San Diego, and to be honest, like, San Diego's art scene is still, you know, infant, I think in its infancy, but getting there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of presses existing, I unheard of, like, you know, and here in San Francisco, you know, there's Copa Press, there's Crown Point Press, there's all these different presses here.
Mm-hmm.
And I never heard of them until I went to grad school. And the idea of, like, people just, they have a place, they print stuff, and they provide different types of various printing services. Is it kind of a community here? Which you, like, do you guys know the other presses that it, like, are here in the Bay Area?
We tried it, yeah. we pride ourselves, like, I mean, and I think this, like, kind of segues well with, like, our work with the book fair.
Yeah.
It's just like the reason we decided to work on the book fair with the partners that we worked on it with Minnesota and Park Life was because, and I'm sure this is true for them too, but for us, it was like, we had built all these relationships just by printing and curating and being artists in this community for a while.
Yeah.
With all these other publishers. And also by exhibiting with them at, like, the other book fairs.
Yeah.
That we were like, oh, yeah, like, now we have this community. Like, how can we make an event that represents this community and also brings other people into it that we didn't know about? Yeah. So that was, like, so, yeah, the answer is yes. I feel like it's a really strong community, all the publishers here. But that being said, it's also, like, so varied. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, Crown Point is such, like, you know, like, has such a different focus from us. And so I don't feel like it's, like, ever competitive in any way.
Right.
Because we all do something so different.
Right.
So that's why, like, for example, like, that's why we wanted to do the fair. Because it's, like, let's show, like, the real diversity of printing in this community.
Right. So what do you have coming up next? Like, Copa-wise, and, you know, your own work.
No, my own work. Yeah. My own work is, like, super slow, and whatever the opposite of deliberate is. So I'm still trying to figure out my next project. But you know, I only have like a couple shows a year.
Yeah, is that because you're so busy with Culpa Press?
With Culpa, yeah. And also I've just learned to take more time with my work that way.
Yeah.
And not that that's for everybody, but just for me personally, like, I feel like I make better work when I work that slow.
Yeah. Like, you're putting more thought into it, you mean?
Or? More thought, and then just, like, letting things come to me. Because a lot of the work that I make is just based on these stories that I hear, you know, like, I'm sure, like, every artist in the world. And so it just takes time to, like, think about those things and let them process and then make work that responds to it. And so for my own personal art practice, I'm just like just working on new stuff right now.
Yeah.
But for Culpa, there's a lot going on. We're having a pop-up shop at the Thing Quarterly in December.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, and so it'll be the 8th to the 18th. We'll have two events, which will be, the first one will be a local launch of Civic TV. So we'll screen it, and the tapes will be available for sale.
Yeah.
Along with all the other things that we'll have at the pop-up shop. And then at the very end of the shop will be another event, which will be Sci-Fi Sundays, which is this ongoing series we do with Sarah Hotchkiss, where she's been like reviewing science fiction films as she watches them, and she writes these like short shotgun reviews.
Oh, interesting.
And so we've published 5 volumes of them now, and they're like in this compendium that is like it's volumes 1 through 5, and we just came out with that.
Are a lot of these like types of ideas, are these initiated by you guys or proposed, or this is like by them coming to you saying, this is what I want to do?
Yeah.
Help us make it happen.
Yeah. Well, so usually it's like, we just are like, I want to work with you to an artist. And then they kind of come back to us with a bunch of ideas, and we try to pick one that works, that we want to work with and that we think we can work with.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so all of our releases kind of work like that, you know?
Yeah.
But before the pop-up shop in December, November 12th, the gallery is called Cell, and it's part of a space called Mandujano, which is like a bookshop with the gallery inside of it.
Yeah.
So Cell is within Mandujano, and it's Hazel Mandahana's and Juan Capistrano's space in Los Angeles. And so we'll screen Civic TV there. Then we'll take it back here and screen it at the Thing. And we'll do the Sci-Fi Sundays launch there. And then...
You guys are busy.
Yeah, and then in February, we're going to be at the LA Art Book Fair. So we're planning a bunch of releases for that, including a book with Ignacio Perez and... who's a Los Angeles-based artist, and we're gonna have like an exhibition of his that we're gonna like curate that'll be open during the fair at the Los Angeles Contemporary Archive, which is like an art book archive in LA.
Where is that located?
It just moved from. It used to be in the same building as Francois Gabaldi. It's like across from Night Gallery, in Boyle Heights. And it moved to Chinatown. They're going to open their new space soon. And so we'll be one of the first shows
like
there.
Two different neighborhoods that they do.
Oh, yeah. And so so we're really excited about like kind of like kicking off stuff over at the new space there.
Yeah. And do you guys, is that like your first time you guys venture out to outside of the Bay Area? Or is like you
oh,
guys,
no.
You
guys, We've been doing the fairs for like almost 5 years now.
Wow.
And it started with the... LA Art Book Fair, which was put on by Printed Matter. And then we did the New York Art Book Fair, which was also them. And then since then, we've done the Vancouver Art Book Fair, Tokyo. And then we also have had like other traveling art projects of our own that have brought us to do exhibitions in other cities and countries.
Have you been able to get anybody interested in those other areas to go to you guys for printed for work?
Oh yeah, it's led to some really great relationships.
Yeah.
Not just work, just like continuing artist
yeah.
relationships with artists.
Yeah.
Like we did this series called the Riza Book Series, and it was in Los Angeles, Marfa, New York, Portland, and San Francisco. And each one of those books, it's based on the Xerox book, which was a book that Seth Sieglob and Jack Wendler made. That was like they asked all the artists who in the book to make work on a Xerox machine.
Yeah.
So we kind of did the same thing with the Rizzo. And so in each city, we would ask like 5 or 6 artists to make work on the Rizzo printer. And then we would bind the books live. And then there would be like a launch at the end of it.
Wow.
And so if you think about it, like, you know, we did five cities, you know, five or six artists each time. So we kind of like, that was a great project to kind of build this network of people that we have continued to work with.
Yeah. That's great, man.
Yeah.
This is really cool. It's the best part about these interviews is that I now get to meet people and learn like how the process works. Cause like, you know, like I mentioned, like I didn't know anything about presses. Right. Mm-hmm. And then I, you know, that they exist. And then I come up here and then I learn. And then I always was intrigued, like how in the world are they making all this stuff? like, what are they doing? Like, you know, and this is, I've learned so much in the last like 30 minutes. Like,
oh, that's great. Yeah. Me like, too. I mean, me too. It's like, I think that a lot of the reason that me and David continue to do like a kind of wide range of projects is we're always like learning from it.
Yeah.
And also just us talking about it helps us figure out what we're doing. Cause a lot of the times you just like lose track of time and you're just like headed down all these different pathways. And only when you start to like try and wrap your head around it by talking to someone, do you like figure out what you're doing?
Yeah.
So I really appreciate it too.
Oh yeah. And I think that that's the best part. I think what makes a good job is that as long as you feel like you're still learning from some, like you're still learning doing it.
Yeah, for like, sure.
You're never going to get bored.
Yeah.
You know? Like otherwise, like, why are you doing it?
Yeah, exactly.
Cool, man. Well, thank you for having you on the podcast. And I would love to have you back on if there's like a show coming up and like to kind of promote it and then kind of talk to you and check it and like stuff like that.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Anytime. Yeah. Great. Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, that's it for this week. I hope you enjoyed hearing Luca talk about his work and the cool stuff that comes out of Copa Press. If you want to learn more about past, present, and future projects come out of Copa, or you just want to buy any of the publications or prints, be sure to visit copapress.com and follow them on either Instagram or Twitter at Copa Press. Lastly, be sure to follow the Art Scene podcast on either Instagram or Twitter at Art Scene PC. All right, till next time, everyone.